Our next presenter is Isabella Firth. She's a project manager for Viewpoint Learning, a San Diego-based company that designs and conducts citizen dialogues on gridlock issues. She has a wide-ranging background in research, communication, writing, and editing. In addition to the work she describes here on public attitudes towards community water fluoridation, she has designed and conducted dialogues on a wide range of policy questions. These include healthcare, the federal budget and entitlements, governance, energy, and sustainable development. In her previous life as an academic, Isabella held teaching positions at several universities, including Hubei University in Wuhan, China, the University of California at Irvine, and San Diego State University. She joined Viewpoint Learning in 2001. Isabella holds a BA from Yale University and a PhD from UC Irvine, and she currently lives in San Diego.
Yes, so I traveled a long way to be here. Okay, so what I'm going to be talking about today, oh, I guess I have to go through my obligatory, boring, no relationships to disclose slide. It makes me feel kind of like a loser, actually. I have no relationships. My company just specializes in designing and conducting citizen dialogues on public policy issues. And this presentation talks about a project we conducted here in San Diego, which was about the specific issue of community water fluoridation, which is interesting to us partly because it's a science-intensive issue. And we found that how people make up their minds about this kind of issue, how they reach judgment on this kind of issue, is very poorly understood. We really don't know a lot about what people are thinking about when they have to come to terms with and make a decision about a science-intensive issue. And water fluoridation is a case in point. What you see in polls is that people, by a pretty strong majority, support community water fluoridation if you ask them about it in a poll. But when such issues come to the ballot, they often fail. The vote is usually very, very close, split 50-50. So we were trying to figure out what is happening here, what's taking place in the course of people's coming to terms with this issue that leads to this drop-off in public support. So this project was conducted in conjunction with the Dental Health Foundation of California and the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. It was funded by a grant from the CDC. And our goals were to determine, first with respect to this specific issue, what considerations are really important as people form their views and what changes their views. How do their interactions with each other shape people's decisions on the issue? How do citizens sort of receive and process information and form their attitudes about this? And to lay the groundwork for future efforts to engage the broader community and educate the public on this issue. And more broadly, we wanted to get some more insight into how the public reaches judgment on policy issues that have a really strong scientific component. So our methodology is called choice dialogue, and it is a step beyond polls and focus groups. As you probably know, when the public hasn't yet made up its mind, polls can be very, very misleading. They give you a very accurate snapshot of where people are right now, right today, but they don't really tell you how people's views change as they learn more, and so they can often reflect a lot of mushiness. What choice dialogues do is go beyond that. They explore how people's minds change as they learn, and once people have had a chance to wrestle with trade-offs, where are they willing to go and where are they not willing to go once they've done that? And we find that after people have gone through this choice dialogue process, we can go back to them even a couple of years later, and their views that they expressed at the end of the session are firm. They're consistent. So something happens in the course of the dialogue day that allows people to arrive at a place of firm judgment. The methodology is pretty consistent. We conduct a series of dialogues with randomly selected representative cross-sections of the public. There are about 35 to 40 participants in each session. These sessions are 8 hours long, so there is a lot of learning that happens in the course of the day. The dialogue is organized around scenarios to give people a place to start their conversation, because often we're working with issues that people haven't spent a lot of time thinking about. We set up a workbook, and we put together a workbook in advance that sets the agenda, gives some background, and lays out the pros and cons. But mostly our participants are doing the work talking with each other, not interacting with experts in the room. We have professional facilitators, two for each session, which keeps people focused and also in a dialogue mode, as opposed to a debate or argumentative mode. We're interested in developing and exploring common ground, not just itemizing all the places where people disagree. And we measure people's opinions at the beginning of the day and again at the end of the day. And that, coupled with a qualitative analysis of what people say over the course of the day, gives a very nuanced picture of where people start and the steps that they go through as they reach judgment. So the dialogues on water fluoridation, we departed somewhat from our usual methodology. We spent the first half of the day focusing on this common ground vision for the future of oral health in San Diego. What are people's top priorities? And got a general sense of where people stood on the question of fluoridation. And then we had them test this vision against a range of advocacy materials, some in favor and some opposing water fluoridation. And what those advocacy materials looked like changed over the three phases of the project. In the first phase, we focused on what is one really classic way of engaging people on public health issues: data, information. The idea is that you give people facts, you give people information, and once they have the right facts, then they'll make up their minds in the quote-unquote right way. The second phase, we looked at materials that were focused on another very common approach to communication on public health issues, which is social marketing. We worked with a social marketing company that specialized in that kind of thing to put together materials that were more emotionally driven and that used those marketing type techniques. And then in the third phase, we tried something very different. We tried a dialogue-based approach that really was focused on common ground and how do you create a balanced response to public concerns. Our total sample was almost 300 randomly selected participants. It was a representative cross-section of San Diegans, representative in terms of age, gender, ethnicity, and also income and education. So, With a question like this, there really are only two possible scenarios. You leave the water alone, or you fluoridate the water. These were the two approaches that we asked people to consider, and we asked them to think about this in terms of some ways of approaching the problem: choice versus personal choice versus community responsibility, science and the environment, and cost-benefit. And what we found, at the beginning of the day, pretty much what you'd see in polls. About two-thirds of people supported water fluoridation, about one-third opposed it, and at the end of the day, they were split 50-50. It was exactly what you see in the wild. So we wanted to look, sort of dig deeper into what we found, what people were telling us, and we found that when you looked at people, about half of the participants supported water fluoridation consistently at the beginning and at the end. About a third consistently opposed it. And then there was this group in the middle of about, a little less than 20% who changed their opinions over the course of the day. So clearly what was happening with those participants. And we looked at them more closely. I'm just going to kind of whip through the data right here. It's available. I can make it available to any of you if you're interested, but I'm not going to read all of the data points. So what did we find out about the people who changed their minds? They were less educated than either the consistent supporters or the consistent opponents. They held their views less strongly at the outset. We had people rate these scenarios on a 10-point scale. The yellow people are consistent opponents, the green people are consistent supporters, and you can see they kind of push toward the edges of the, they either really like it or they really hate it. The people who switched, much mushier, more in the middle. So they weren't as firmly convinced one way or the other at the outset. They were more likely than consistent opponents of water fluoridation to accept the benefit of this public health intervention. They said, yes, it's more likely, it works, it's helpful to the underserved, and it's cost effective. But they were also extremely sensitive to risk. They were very concerned about people getting too much if the water is fluoridated, and they were concerned about the question of risk. So in all these charts, the light blue bar in the middle is the people who switched, measured against consistent opponents and consistent supporters. They had very low levels of trust, and this proved to be very important in science and in medical authority. And what we found very interesting about this, though, was that they did not conclude that water fluoridation was dangerous or that it wasn't that it was ineffective. What they said was, we're concerned about risk, and we don't trust the people who are presenting this to us. So they opted for better safe than sorry, better to stick with the devil we know than to make a change. And that really was the determinant in the people who changed their opinion over the course of the day. Now we found that people went through a very consistent set of steps as they came to terms with this issue. They started out by saying, it's really important to us to preserve individual choice. We want to do this wherever it's possible. Then they thought about it a little more. They said, well, it should take a bit, but maybe individual choice isn't everything. There are certain situations where it needs to take a back seat. And if there is a significant demonstrable benefit to the community, then there are all sorts of cases where we allow the community good to overwhelm to trump individual choice. So the question is water fluoridation effective, safe, and beneficial? Then people would say, we need more evidence. We don't have enough evidence to be able to decide. But we gave them evidence. And they said, wait a minute, how can we trust this? Evidence can be spun. And so that's where the question of trust really came to the forefront. We can't trust this evidence that we are being given, whether it is factual or sort of emotional. People are exquisitely sensitive to spin. So where does that leave you? If you have a strong opinion, yes, then that opinion stays, either pro or con. If you don't have a strong opinion, people said, do nothing. Better safe than sorry. Now, there were arguments that people found especially compelling on both sides, but these are things that people agreed to, that people felt were very compelling arguments, but these arguments didn't change people's minds. They were very concerned that they were being spun by advocates, and so this increased mistrust and increased resistance to change. The people with strong opinions dug in. The people who were undecided became frustrated. They would look for common sense evidence or else just withdraw. And what was really interesting to us was that both the information-based and the social marketing-based approaches produced exactly the same result. So the usual technique in campaigns of this kind, if one side puts out information, the other side puts out more information, puts out better information. And the idea is that the good information is going to win. That's not what we saw in these dialogues, that your spin versus my spin is counterproductive. In fact, it gins up mistrust. It makes people even less likely to make a change. So here are the specific findings from the three phases. In phase one, this was information-based, and here's phase two, which is the social marketing approach. Basically the same pattern of significant support going to a pretty much even split. So then we thought, well, let's try something a little different. Let's try a different approach. Let's try an approach that tries to sort of circumvent this spin versus spin approach that really is focused on building on common ground and that responds in a direct way, a balanced way, to public concerns, which were very powerful. So the focus shifts from how can we win to how can we as experts help the public make up its mind. Now, this was a very, very small sample. This was a total of about 45 people, two brief dialogues, but they were very interesting. I think they point in some interesting directions. So what we found, the common ground was very strongly confirmed. The idea that it's cost effective, that it works, that we don't want people to get too much fluoride, and we are very concerned about risk. We want to do things that are safe. We want to, all of these things, these common ground findings were very strongly confirmed. What was really different between these two sessions was the level of trust that people brought into the room. And in one group, we happened randomly to come up with a group of people that was very mistrustful. And in the other group, people who scored more highly on our trust measures. And you can see it really was the determinant in how these particular groups arrived at their final determination about whether or not to support water fluoridation. Now, this is something that people bring into the room with them. But we also noticed that the spin versus spin dynamic wasn't nearly as powerful in this in these sessions, and that these more dialogue-based materials that focused on common ground may have helped to prevent some of that erosion of support that we saw among softer supporters. So, conclusions. What can you take away from this? We think that it's extremely helpful for people who are building public health communications campaigns to focus and build on common ground. Often, when you have two sides of an issue, the supporters and the opponents share a lot of common ground, and that often gets totally obscured in the heat of a campaign. So that's very, very important. Facts aren't going to change people's minds. Information is very easy to ignore. It's very easy to deny. We found over and over again that people would even if you gave them a fact that absolutely contradicted their point of view, they would disregard it. You know, it's too easy to spin. So how do you make facts heard? You have to build trust. You have to show that you understand the values and concerns people are bringing with them, and you have to emphasize the extent to which those values and concerns are shared. Spin makes mistrust worse. Often social marketing techniques, the one that I often think of is, think of the children. These are often interpreted as spin, and they can be counterproductive. You have to use them very carefully. You have to avoid one-sided arguments. You have to acknowledge or demonstrate some openness to other points of view. And extreme arguments tend to backfire. People are very quick to pick up on those. Transparency about interests is absolutely essential. People want to know who benefits from this and why. Interesting note just on water fluoridation, often people found that they were a little more open to the idea when they discovered that dentists supported it, because they said, well, if dentists support it, even though it's presumably going to cut into their business, that said something to people. That resonated with people. So they want to know who's benefiting and why. And that common sense is very resonant, especially in a climate of mistrust, especially when technical data is potentially tainted. People will turn to information that kind of reinforces their sense of how the world works. So different approaches can help to build trust. What's very important is to acknowledge that public concerns exist, that they're important, and respond to them seriously. It's not just about correcting misunderstandings, it's about addressing the underlying concerns that give rise to those misunderstandings. Building on common ground, responding in a direct and balanced way to public concerns, and shifting the focus from winning to helping people come to terms with a difficult issue. If you don't have trust, the best arguments aren't going to be heard. And you can build it up, but only in advance of an actual campaign. In the heat of a campaign, it's too late. You need to get in there beforehand and invest in education and outreach that establishes and builds on common ground.